know what you've done, like the back of your hand, know what's important to you, like the back of your hand, know what good looks like for you, like the back of your hand, and then be able to talk about that clearly. Because when you're clear, everything and everyone else around you is clear.
Hi, welcome to Selling to Enterprises podcast. This is Zia here. My guest today is one of the top 8 sales experts on LinkedIn and is recognized as one of the top sales voices on social media. Amy Wohlers, founder and CEO at Avenue Talent Partners. In our discussion today, Amy shared great advice for sales professionals, especially on finding new jobs and getting hired. Without further ado, let's get started.
Thank you for having me. And it was a journey to get here. So I appreciate you being very kind and patient with me and my gnarly calendar. So thank you. I'm thrilled to talk shop.
Awesome. Right. To get things started, Amy, talk to us about your journey so far. Connect the dots for us, please.
Well, it's been an interesting journey. So I've been in the game for a while. I have been in sales and startups and that whole ecosystem for the last 20 plus years, actually like 25 plus years, which is, it makes me feel old when I say that out loud, even though I feel like I've only just begun. So that being said, I was thrown into the deep end of sales. I started out my career as a recruiter for tech, which if anybody knows me, I'm giggling because I don't speak that language. When I sit in tech, talking shop with an engineer or a developer or something along those, or someone along those lines, not something, but like the topic, something along those lines, I don't know. And somehow I did it and I worked for this company and loved them. And I go all the way back to the 90s. And there was a thing called the dot-com bubble where I was part of a company. It was just called the dot-com company then, but for all intents and purposes, it was a startup. And I learned really valuable lessons. One of the lessons was we put all of our eggs into one basket. And I survived a bunch of layoffs. And I remembered the CEO sitting down with me and saying, "We love you, but there's nothing left to recruit for. And the only way through this is to sell and to get more sales. And we have an opening for you there. But if not, we just can't have you anymore." And I loved them. I loved the company. I fiercely loyal to that. And I was thrown into the deep end of enterprise sales, and the rest is history. So my journey then was selling products and services, always in and around the HR tech recruiting talent acquisition landscape. And those are problems that I have worked really hard to solve my entire career, is how do you get the right people in the right roles doing the right work and then keep them? And that's been a problem for the ages, whether it goes back to the 90s when I was coming up, or today, whether there was the digital age or not, these are still really real problems. And so I started my first company in 2008. And 2008 was the second downturn that I went through. And we'll leave that right there. It was a very hard time for me personally and professionally because I am a bootstrap kind of gal. My partner and I were bootstrapped and I didn't have enough funding to go through the storm of a downturn. We were in the healthcare managed care space. And that was a big part of that election year. And so everything went just, and let alone it was a downturn, let alone the autos were about to collapse. And our clients were also attached to that. So it was just like, yeah, we love you guys, but we can't do anything for 3 years. And I didn't have enough money to bootstrap for 3 years putting it into the business. And so I exited and it was hard. But I knew even in that time, I was going to go and do it all over again. And so in 2015, I started Avenue Talent Partners, and that is my business. In 2020, I fell into starting and co-founding, not starting, but co-founding Thursday Night Sales. So the big backdrop or connecting the dots to me is I've been a sales leader. I've been an individual contributor. As an individual contributor, it was always enterprise sales. I sold over $100 million in revenue on my own. That's not with channel or anybody else. It was me. And I've learned a lot. And I've seen a lot and I've done a lot of good things and I've messed up a lot of things at the same time. And I think part of what I do today, whether it's with Avenue Talent Partners, whether it's Thursday Night Sales, whether it's wherever you catch me, I feel very strongly about trying to use my voice to pay some of those lessons for, because I've learned a lot. And especially when it comes to how we look at our careers, how we think about hiring, what that looks like in tech, how competitive that is. Those are really things that people struggle with. And through all of my trials and tribulations, I figured out how to crack the code a little bit.
Amy, when you go out and we talk to your customers or potential customers, share with us what are the key attributes that your customers are looking for when they are trying to hire sales leaders? What are the top attributes they look for?
A lot of the time, and I'm answering your question, but you're going to think I'm not answering it. A lot of the time they don't know. They just know that they want to get it right. And they'll give me descriptors that everybody talks about, right? So I need somebody that has a growth story. I need somebody that understands SaaS. I need a good leader. And I think what's interesting about that conversation is when I put on my discovery hat, which served me very well in my career, when I put that hat on and I start probing of, well, what does good look like for you? It's kind of like that deer in the headlights moment. And that's a lot of the work that I do, is to help people figure out, forget about what you read online, forget about what the podcasts say, forget about what webinars might say, or a case study or a book. Those are all general broad brushstrokes, but it's for you, right? What applies to you? And I don't care if you're looking at your competitor, the nuances of their business and the setup, that's unique to them, just like your business is unique to you. So let's really figure out what it looks like for you specifically. And so what they ask for a lot of the time is like the shiny object stuff, right? It's kind of like when I talk to a sales leader and it's like, so what's important to you? And they're like, I need to go for good culture. And I'm like, okay, well, what does that mean, right? Like, good culture is, that could mean something very different to you than it does to me. For you, it could be, I need leadership that is accountable and is transparent. And these are the ways that it displays for me. And I could say, I just care about product market fit, because without that, nothing else happens. I don't really care if I have a horrible leader. I need to be able to do this and know with confidence that I can do this. And I have a leadership team that gets out of my own way. Those are very different things, right? And so if I just went for face value of, well, it has to be a good culture fit, I'm assuming a lot and leaving a lot of other important bits and pieces behind. So, you know, I think the thing that they look for the most is, and I'm going to reverse engineer it a little bit, this is the number one reason why, I don't care if it's a sales leader, I don't care if it's a salesperson, I don't care who it is, this is the number one reason why people don't get invited back for interviews. You cannot get specific to connect the dots about the following: what you did, where you did it, why you wanted to do it in the first place, with whom you did it with, what the outcome was, the how around that outcome, any lessons that you've learned, and then being able to connect that back to the so what factor of why should I care? So a lot of the time when people are answering questions, they're going in different directions or they're speaking about it in a very high level and they can't take it lower. So I think that being specific piece is really key, which then goes back into, there are plenty of companies that are like, we're a SaaS company and we want to hire people with a SaaS background. And then there are plenty of companies that will say, we are a SaaS company, but I care about will and skill more than I do about experience or domain. And so I think it would be very irresponsible for me and anybody listening to this to say, because I think people want to know and then they get tied up into it. And that's like the anchor for them. And it's like, guess what? If you're listening to this podcast, here's the reality of the situation. Know what you've done, like the back of your hand. Know what's important to you, like the back of your hand. Know what good looks like for you, like the back of your hand. And then be able to talk about that clearly, because when you're clear, everything and everyone else around you is clear. And that's where that, so let's do a little role play, Zia. Let's say I'm interviewing with you and you're like, well, Amy, you've sold more services than you've sold products. You started your own company for the last, going into 7 years, it's been services. It hasn't been products. And we're a SaaS company. That's a problem. Do you know what I would do? Here's how it's not a problem. This is what I've done. This is how I've thought about it. This is how I developed a pipeline. This is what the outcome was. This is how I approached discovery. This is how I prioritize my time. This is how I think about territory. These are the outcomes. Here's how I've built my business. And by the way, I did the same thing in SaaS. In SaaS, these are the four places that I've worked within the SaaS space. See how I'm immediately addressing it. I'm not getting defensive about it. And I can connect the dots about the things that you can't teach a salesperson, right? So I'm going to pause there because I know you asked me a different question. I went in a little bit of a different direction, but I really wanted to emphasize the point, Zia, that there isn't like a read, rinse, and repeat. Everything is different. Every person is different. It would be like me saying to somebody, you have to be this cookie cutter person to be successful. Yeah. And the answer is no, we're all different.
I saw your recent post. I loved it, Amy, which was about, you know, people over 40 can still be A-plus hires, right? Talk to us more about that. I loved it. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I am 40 plus. As I said in the posting, I'm 47. And maybe it's because I have a really good dye job. People are shocked by when I tell them how old I am. And I think because people automatically assume I'm not 47 years old, that they're very disarmed with me to be like, you know, we really want somebody that has grit and a fire in their belly. And, you know, after 35, like, they're just like wanting to go on the golf course and just kind of chill. And they don't really want to work that hard. And it's amazing to me that it comes up a lot. Yeah. And by the way, because I got some heat on that posting, I'm not outing my clients. I'm not talking about my clients. My clients don't think like this. And if they do, we talk about it and they're open-minded. And the only way to progress, to fix something, is to not shame someone and to be open-minded, but I digress. So it comes up a lot. It comes up in other places where I hang out and have open conversations that people that are 40 plus, in their 50s, in their 60s, that they have a longer, harder time of getting a job. And the sad part is that ageism is alive and well, especially in tech, especially in B2B tech, especially in B2B tech sales. And it really is disappointing to me because I will say for the first time in my lifetime, we have five different generations working together. And this really big, important and critical emphasis on diversity, that's happening, right? But diversity isn't just race. And it's not just gender. It's people with disabilities. It's veterans. It's also the 55 plus community, right? Yeah. Among so many other things. And so you have people that have paid their dues, that have learned a lot of things, that have been through a lot of things, that have something to say that's of substance and experience that can help you. Just because they're in the same book as you a few chapters ahead doesn't mean that they don't have any more value. And by the way, you little young whippersnappers out there, you're going to get old too. It happens to everybody. And so flash forward in 20 years for you, how would you like it if you feel like, for me, I'm 47, I feel like I've just begun. Like I'm ready to do this thing. And I can tell you the way I work, I have always outpaced people that are older and younger. Still to this day. So I take very big issue with somebody telling me just because of my age, they don't know anything else about me that I'm put out to pasture. No. And so, yes, I have a lot to say on that topic because there are people that are talented, wonderful, wise, wanting to help, wanting to work hard gems out there that might have gray hair when you don't, and who cares?
That's a great point. That's a great point. And what's your advice to people who are actually facing that ageism, Amy, who are seeing that, who are facing the discrimination while hunting for job?
I think you have to do a lot. So first, there's two things to do. There is a gentleman. His name is Austin Belsack.
Okay.
He has a company called Cultivated Culture. And his methodology around how to approach creating opportunities for yourself is spot on. I absolutely subscribe to it. I also have a guide on the Avenue to Talent Partners blog, and I'm not trying to be this weirdo. I don't play salespeople. I play sales leaders and CS leaders at the VP plus level for earlier stage startups. So oftentimes I can't help everybody, but I've written about how to create opportunity step by step, and it works. Regardless, my stepfather, who had been with GE for years and years and years, was laid off and he was freaking out and had no idea. He didn't even know what LinkedIn was. And he did what I said, and he had three offers within 2 months. It works. So you just have to do the work. right? So if anybody wants to know what that looks like, you can go to the Avenue Talent Partners blog, website. And in the section that's applicable for candidates, there is a guide for sale. It's $199 and it's everything that you need to know about how to create that opportunity for yourself. If you'd like it, there you go. That being said, how do I think about this? I think first and foremost, you do not apply to jobs online. You don't do that. Please stop that. You have a less than 2% chance of somebody responding to you. Why would you bet against yourself 98% of the time? That's not cool. Please don't do that. Also, you're going to have to spend a little bit more time, but it's that whole thing of what you put into something is what you get out of it. You're going to have to put a little bit more time into investigating a company. So if I'm looking, if I'm super turned on by startups, which I am, right? Like if something happened to my company tomorrow, you'd catch me at a startup. But here's what I would do, knowing what I know now. I probably wouldn't focus a lot of my time on a first-time technical founder that is 25 years old. And if I was really turned on by their business model, again, and everyone that's listening to this is going to be like, what a hypocrite. I'm not judging that book by its cover. I'm going to do additional research. In the company, how many other people are like that founder versus like me as a woman in her 40s, as a, you know, I want to see, is there a diverse group of folk or is it just a bunch of people that are all the same? Also, I'm going to look at the narrative that this founder is talking about, right? Not on their website, but in podcasts, webinars. Are they publicly saying we haven't gotten diversity right before, or having a diverse group of people in different communities, in different backgrounds, in different thought processes is a priority? I don't know what to do though. I would snuggle up and get to know that founder all day long because they want help, right? You can't help somebody that doesn't want it, but you can if they do. And so I would be paying attention to those things. And those things are not easily uncovered at the surface. So this is what I mean by you've got to spend some more time seeing. I'd also be looking, is this company turning their staff over every 6 months? And if that's the case, I don't care how old you are. Who wants in on that? Not me. www.notme.com. Somebody else maybe, but not me. So when I think about that, these are some factors, right? You hedge your bets in a lot more of a, nothing safe, but in a lot more of a safe way when you do that research and you realize, well, wait, this company, they are open-minded. This company, there are a lot of different kinds of people that work there. This company, no, there aren't, but they have a real big commitment to this. And it's not just in the fancy words on the website. They're backing this up on, they wrote a case study about founders like them and not knowing what to do. And these are the things that they've done. And it's not just fancy speak, but it matters to them. It's all that I call it looking for the tells. It's looking for the things that people won't just tell you in an interview. It's how they're displaying everywhere else in the wild. What is their natural state?
I mean, getting a little more deeper into it, you know, when do you think is a good time for sales leaders to start looking for a newer job?
Well, it's not so cut and dry. And there are a lot of different factors. I think people need to give themselves and the situation and their employers the benefit of the doubt. I know it's a horribly unpopular opinion, especially with everybody talking about the great resignation and every employer sucks and people are out to get you. Guess what? No, they're not. And not everybody needs to be a creator or an entrepreneur or doing it for themselves, because if it was that easy, we would all be doing it for ourselves and be independently wealthy. And that's not the case. And that doesn't mean that every employer is bad. And quite frankly, I am sick and tired of that narrative. What I would encourage people to do is, you know your own self better than anybody else does. But what I think is interesting is most people don't show up to listen to themselves. So before you decide to do one thing or the other thing, most people just like go half-cocked and start taking calls because they had a bad day or their comp plan is going to be changing and they don't even know what the change is. And it's just bad because people don't like change. I don't care how many people are like, I'm so adaptable. 9 times out of 10, you're not. And you react out of a fear-based driver. Cut it out. Those are all signals. That's it. That's all it is. Wait, why am I feeling this icky way? What's going on? I'm a huge believer in the power of a journal. And again, I'm going to sound like I'm super self-promotional. I don't mean to be, but this is just paying it forward to help. I journal every day. Zia, if I could show you without, my laptop's on, but if it would, make my keyboard fall over. I've got 4 journals piled up and my keyboard's right on. So like, it would be bad. It'd be like Django over here, but I journal every day, personally, professionally, and any which way to Sunday. And on the professional side, I have a system and I've talked about the system and I've written about the system. So if you go to avenuetalentpartners.com and in the blog section under the search bar, just go journal and voila, my secret sauce article will be there for you. And it works. And I can't tell you how many people that have read it and used it come back to me. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. Here's the thing. When you show up to listen to yourself, you realize that you're just having a bad day, or you realize that you are in hell. And it's okay, one or the other. You just don't want to make a rash decision, because when you're making rash decisions and you're not clear, remember what I said before about getting clear? When you're clear, everything else around you is clear. So especially in enterprise sales, you might have a bad quarter. It doesn't mean that you should throw the baby out with the bathwater, because here's the thing about enterprise sales, friends. You have to rebuild that pipeline that takes anywhere on the very, 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 very low end, 6 months. And on the high end, it could be years. So if you're going to walk away from something, you better make darn well sure that you're going to something that's of substance. And 9 times out of 10, most people can't answer that for me specifically. And that's what I care about. And that's what you should be caring about. So it's like, okay, is it just a bad day? Is it just a bad quarter? The grass isn't always greener on the other side. And oftentimes it's where we water it. Have you done your job today to water your grass? And a lot of the time it's no, or it's assuming the worst intent from the people around you and never giving them the benefit of the doubt to have the conversation to say, full disclosure, you're talking about changes. I've been burned by changes in the past. Can you enlighten me to what some of these changes are? Because I don't want to make an assumption. I care about my role here. I want to continue to grow and thrive. Most people don't do that. That's what when everybody talks about vulnerability, ladies and gentlemen, that's what it looks like in real life. When you can actually have that kind of conversation versus rolling up with your arms crossed, and even listen to my voice, it's changing. Your arms crossed, and I'm sitting across the table from you. I'm like, uh-huh. Yeah, this change sounds really good. In the back of your mind, it's like, I'm not even listening to this change, because guess what? I've already dusted off my resume and I've got 4 interviews. You're chasing the shiny objects then. You're not solving the problems that if you don't solve them where you are, they're going to follow you.
How do sales leaders, they decide, okay, probably it's a good time for me to start looking for it. How do they start doing? How should they be doing it? What are some of the best practices?
Well, step one, don't apply to a job online. Step two, it is like how you coach your sales team. It's like a pipeline, right? And the more opportunities you have in your pipeline, the more equipped you are to make decisions. Now, if you're working with a recruiter like me or an executive search firm like mine, I'm not a quantity gal, I'm a quality gal. And so I might have one role for you. I vet the mess out of my clients. These are good companies. And if that hits the mark for you and it works out for you, great, do that. The big thing that I think sales leaders need to do is A, get clear. So a lot of the stuff that we've already talked about, B, use a scorecard. This is for sales leaders and anybody else. When you're clear about what you want, it's really easy. You and I both know sales leaders churn a lot in tech. Part of why I think that is, and what I know through the data that I've collected over the last 6+ years that I've had my company, people chase shiny objects. That is an epidemic. It is a big problem. It is a very prevalent problem. And so most people will go for the shiniest object and they forget to ask all of the other important questions. This is why I believe wholeheartedly in the power of a scorecard, because it anchors you to the things that are important, because before you started interviewing, you got clear about what that was. So you can't be seduced, right? Your emotions can't get in the way. And you can say, oh gosh, you know what? I have 10 things on my scorecard and I've covered 8. I don't know these other 2. And actually those other 2 mean the most to me. I got to go back and double click on that to figure that out. So scorecard's really, really critical. I think also how you do it is your network is a really big deal. And no, I'm not talking about just personal brand. I'm talking about professional reputation. I'm talking about the colleagues that you've worked with in the past that have been in the trenches with you, that have seen what you've done firsthand. Please keep in touch with them. It's a big, small world, and you never know where paths cross. The thing about a personal brand on LinkedIn, well, yes, I'm on LinkedIn every day, and I'm not trying to be a hypocrite. I'm a big believer of like what you see is what you get in front of the scenes and behind the scenes. What I see with a lot of other people is you see a facade online and it's a very different situation behind the scenes. Back channels are real. So if you're just promoting that you're leader of the year here on LinkedIn and you've turned your team over time and time again, and they detest you and you don't know how to forecast and coaching isn't a thing and you don't know what your tech stack is and you can't speak to that, that's going to catch up with you, whether you have the best personal brand or not. And that personal brand, like attracts like, you might get a job, but there's a difference between a career and a job. And so when I think about using your network, I would start with people that saw me firsthand and know how I think, know how I operate, know how I communicate, know how I cross-functionally work with others, know how I think about hiring, know what's up in my brain about data, about metrics, about forecasting, about the way that I show up to have that seat at the table as an executive. Why wouldn't you go down memory lane and regroup with people and say, hey, and what was their path, right? So if you really respect somebody and they're thriving, well, when they were where you are, where did they go after that? What are those common themes? And is that appetizing or appealing to you? Could that help you? And then if the answer is yes, knock on the door and have a conversation with them about how they can help you with that.
And Amy, you are one of the top sales voices on LinkedIn. How did you go about that? I mean, how much time did it take for you to reach that stage?
They delegate 10 every year. Uh-huh. And I think it's been going on for a few years now.
Wow.
Yeah, it is. So here's the thing. I don't have a good methodology. I'm not trying to sell a course on how to be a LinkedIn top voice or any of that. Truly, for me, I'm an outspoken kind of gal, as I think you saw on this podcast today, pinky up and everything. And when I think about that, it's like what I talked about when I introduced myself, or you asked me about connecting the dots. I grew up with very supportive family members that were like, you should use your voice. You should. And if you use your voice, you need to have something to say. And if you don't have anything to say, don't say anything at all, right? And this is in my fiber of every part of who I am. And what's interesting is I grew up in HR tech. I remember when LinkedIn was created as a company. I remember when they IPO'd. I remember when they were acquired by Microsoft. And I've always been a LinkedIn user, especially being in HR tech, right? They were a competitor of mine. So LinkedIn has always been a priority for one reason or the other in my life. I got really good advice when I started my company that the power of content, when you truly have something of substance to say that's driven by your experience firsthand, because there's a big difference of me trying to rip somebody else off to sound smart versus my own point of view. So there's a big difference between context, and then competency. And I try to make sure that anytime I hit that post button or comment button or share button, that I can check off each one of those boxes. And so when I think about this, the advice that I got was, if you use your voice, it's a long tail, like it's a long game. And I'm an enterprise gal, right? Long game does not scare me at all. I'm built for that. But you'll be amazed at how like attracts like. And that is very powerful. And I'm grateful that even before I started my company, I was leaning into the power of using your voice, and I've never looked back. And so I didn't even really know much about LinkedIn top voices. They don't tell you that they are evaluating you. About 2 weeks before it's announced, they knock on your door and they say, you got to keep this really quiet, but you're going to get this. And it's like, what? You don't even know. Like, you have no idea. They just come in like a wrecking ball, a beautiful wrecking ball. And you're like, wait, what? So I don't know what their criteria is. I don't know how you do it, but what they shared with me is that it's very clear that you care about using your voice to help people, and that the quality of how you're using your voice is there and that it makes a difference. And if that is truly their criteria, I don't have the algorithm. I don't know who the wizard is behind the curtain, looking at all this stuff. But what I do know is if that is really part of the criteria, I am incredibly honored to be recognized from the platform itself, where we all spend way too much time, to be recognized for that. Because if that is true, then I've moved the needle a little bit. And for me, a big part of what I'm doing is I do want to use my voice to pay my lessons forward, to leave this ecosystem that I love so much better than when I entered into it. And I have a hashtag that I use all the time, better together. That's really important to me. And so all I've done is I am consistent about challenging myself to start and be part of conversations that mean something to me and hopefully to other people. So I don't just post and hope that it goes popping off. Like some of my posts get 50 likes and 20 people commenting. But if you look at the comments, it's a really meaty conversation. And I'm so here for that, right? So my whole thing is, it's never been about the vanity metrics. It's never been about how many followers I have or what my audience is like. It's about talking with people to get better together. And because of that, it's cool to see business come my way. It's cool to see relationships come my way, personal and professional. It's cool to see business opportunities that don't have anything to do with my business come my way. Cool to see writing opportunities and speaking opportunities come my way. But it's not something that you just do, or in my opinion, you could follow somebody's system or somebody's methodology, and that's great. But how long are you willing to do that? And if you're not doing it for any other reason than just chasing, you're leaving, in my opinion, for me, this is what I care about. Other people care about other things, but for me, there's so much magic and beauty that's left behind, along with a lot of opportunity.
So Amy, I have two more questions for us today. One is, you know, very importantly, you know, again, taking stretching on the topic. So sales leaders have found new jobs. They have started in a new company. What do you think they should be doing in the first 60 days or 90 days to make sure that they lay the right foundation for an awesome career in that company?
There's a really good book that I think everybody should read. It's called The First 90 Days. So that's a good book. And it maps it out way better than I will right now. So so I subscribe to this book, but also, you know, without the book, this is always what I did. Ultimately, people want to be seen, heard, and understood, and they want to be valued. The leader coming through the door and the team getting the leader coming into the door, right? And so in my opinion, the leaders that come in and it's like, here's my plan and it's my way or the highway, and they bust in like a wrecking ball, you do a lot more disruption than you do any good. And you automatically put people up on the defensive versus disarm them. So I'm a big fan of coming in to understand how, even though we went through the interview, even though I could have done a 30, 60, 90 and that got approved and everybody's excited, it's always a little different in real life when you really get there. And so I would be snuggling up to my team. Who is doing what? Do we have the right people doing the right work in the right roles? What's really happening? What's the heartbeat here? How are people thinking about this? What are their challenges? That's one. So team. Two, buyer. How on earth can you advocate for what needs to happen from a growth engine, which is what sales is, that drives revenue, if you don't understand your buyer? And no, I'm not talking about a sales leader needing to carry a bag and have a quota. But if you can't talk about what you do and understand it like the back of your hand and have a firsthand account of what your marketplace is all about, how on earth can you drive the strategy? I that just doesn't make sense to me. So you got to understand that. In addition to that, you need to snuggle up and understand that it is an ecosystem. It's not sales against the world. So how are you getting to know your marketing team and their strategies and the intersection between sales and marketing and some of the blind spots and some ways to make it better and how each one of you is thinking about it to do it together? Same thing with CS, same thing with product, same thing with engineering, same thing with your operations folks, right? Your HR team, if you have to hire, you better snuggle up and figure that out together. Same thing with your finance team, with your procurement team. You're going to have to deal with contracts. You have sales ops. That all of this is an ecosystem. And I think in those first, you know, you broke it out, like let's call it the first 90. These are the things that you've got to be doing so that when you're laying the foundation down of here is what we are going to do now, you have a lot more buy-in because you took the time to understand. You don't get buy-in when you come in and you assume. So that's what you do.
Great advice, Amy. So Amy, personal question that I ask all my guests is, you know, how do you handle a down day? I mean, a day when you're not motivated enough or when you're going through something, how do you personally handle that? What do you do?
Well, I wish I could say it was like Teflon and I don't have a down day, but we all have down days, to your point. There are a lot of things that I do. So one, I journal. And it's interesting. So there's a really good friend of mine. His name is Phil Guest. He's in the UK. And we'll have calls. And he turned me on to this system that he has. And I've added that into my repertoire for this year. So I have kind of like two different ways that I journal. One is like, I have long form, and then I have what I've journaled about for business. And then I have this. So I guess I have three ways, actually. And people are probably listening to this like, what? How does she have that? It's not like I'm here for like 12 hours, do your diary with Amy. It's just like getting some things off of my, I'm a verbal processor. And so getting it out is very cathartic and it's very helpful for me. But Phil talked to me about this dot system. And the dot system here, I'll show you. Nobody will be able to see it, but you will. So the dot system is this: you color code. And when you have a bad day, it's really interesting to see if I have a bad day, were they all bad days? Because sometimes when you're having a really bad day, it's like you feel like everything is horrible around you. And sometimes you just need some perspective to understand that it's just a bad day. And so this color system, see all these little dots? They all have different colors. And red is the worst day. Do you see any red on this? None. Yellow is like a step above a bad day. I have one yellow. This is January. I have one yellow day. Everything else is a good day or a marvelous day. So what's interesting about this is, in the grand scheme, on that yellow day, if I looked, and that yellow day was the 21st of January, if I look back, I now see, wait a second, this is just a day and the rest of the month is fine. Like, what is going on here? So that's one really great way to reframe.
That's perspective, yeah.
The other thing that I learned to do was, sometimes the stories that we tell ourselves aren't rooted in reality. And if I'm having a bad day, it's easy to build on that in your mind of like, I don't want to do this. This sucks. That sucks. This was hard. I don't feel like it. Womp, womp. And I learned that if you think about the opposite word of what you're telling yourself and you say that word over and over again, you immediately have a mindset shift. It's crazy how it works. And it, maybe you write it down a bunch. Maybe you say it out loud. Maybe you say it in your mind, whatever works for you. That works really well for me. And also it's the people you surround yourself with. So when I'm having a bad day, I have an incredible husband and partner, and he knows what a roller coaster ride I'm on. I deal with people every day. That in anybody in sales or recruiting, we deal with people, and people can change their mind and it can get tough. And, you know, all these things, he's my rock. I could talk to him at 3 a.m. and he'll talk through things with me. I have a really good support system of colleagues and friends. And if I need them, they're there. And so these are some things. If it wasn't snowing like it is now, I love nature. Like sometimes it's just to take a break and look. I love birds. And I literally have, like, if I'm looking out this way, I have a really sophisticated bird feeding system and I get all sorts of birds. And I might just gaze out the window for 5 minutes and just shut my laptop down and look and just remind myself that there's a lot of bigger things than just me right now.
Oh, that's beautiful, Amy. Thanks for sharing that. Amy, you know, what's the best way for someone to reach out to say hi if someone wants to, you know, follow you? Or
I'm on the LinkedIn. I think I'm the only Amy Volos on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter as well. You can come to the Avenue Talent Partners website. I'm pretty easy to find. And if you really want to have open conversation to get better together as a sales leader in sales, in CS, whoever's listening to this, every Thursday night, myself and my co-founder, Scott Lease, we show up to Thursday night sales and we have very open conversation with people in a safe place. So if you can't find me in any one of those places, there's a problem because I'm really accessible.
Yes, yes. But Amy, I know we have not even scratched the surface here, right? There is so much that we can all learn from your experiences. But, you know, thanks for taking the time on coming, you know, coming to the pod today and sharing some of those experiences. Greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Zia. Thank you. And thank you for being so patient with me because of my gnarly calendar. So I appreciate it. And whatever I shared today, I truly hope it was helpful for anybody listening. So thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please do subscribe to the podcast, and I will greatly appreciate if you can leave a review. If you have any suggestions for future guests or any feedback, please write to me at zia@sellingtoenterprises.com. See you on the next episode. Thank you.